Welcome to On Our Watch, a podcast about coastal erosion and sustainability in Louisiana, as well as the implications for coastal systems worldwide. My name is Marion Evans. I'm a filmmaker and a producer of the documentary On Our Watch, a feature-length film about Louisiana's coastal land loss crisis. The film's director, Jonathan Evans, and I are proud to produce this podcast series that will continue to explore important coastal issues through conversations with local residents, community leaders, and experts. In this episode, we're speaking with Jessica Henkel. Jessica is the deputy director to the chief scientist at the Water Institute, as well as the director of the Restore Act Center of Excellence for Louisiana. Her areas of expertise include science advising and coordination, structured decision-making, large-scale restoration planning, and avian ecology. And now, our interview with Jessica Henkel. Well, thank you for joining us today, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So you've been studying and doing restoration and conservation work for quite a few years now. What was it that initially drew you to this field?
So I had a pretty meandering kind of path to my current career. I actually was an English major in college, but I had always loved the natural world. And, you know, was the kid who adopted a whale as a kid, you know, and followed its migration path as it went up and down the Atlantic, always subscribing to National Geographic Kids, all of that. But I don't think I realized that there was a career in science policy and restoration and conservation that existed as an option until I was actually had already gotten out of college, frankly. My first job out of college, I actually worked at Cambridge University Press in their ecology, evolutionary biology, and engineering department as an editorial assistant. And working there, I got to work with some really renowned biologists and evolutionary ecologists. You know, for example, I helped to publish Ernst Mayr's last book, you know, one of the fathers of evolutionary biology. And so it was really wonderful getting to do that. But I realized by that work that I didn't really want to be the one editing the work. I wanted to be the one that was conducting the research myself. So that's when I came back to school and grad school. And that brought me here to New Orleans, to the University of New Orleans, where for my master's, I studied the population genetics of the critically endangered Mississippi sandhill crane, which is a subspecies of sandhill crane that we have right over across the Mississippi border. And coming here for that work changed two big important things for me and for my life. One, I fell in love with birds. Before I did that work, if I had a taxonomic scale or hierarchy of like species I wanted to work with, birds weren't at the top of it. But ask anybody now, I'm a big bird nerd. So that changed for me. But it also brought me here to New Orleans. And I fell in love with New Orleans, but also fell in love with the Gulf Coast habitats and the Gulf Coastal communities. And so when I finished my master's, I knew I wasn't ready to leave. And so I continued on with my PhD at Tulane. And with that work, I actually started my first semester of my PhD at Tulane was a semester of the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. I was planning to study migratory shorebirds. And so obviously my entire study area was deeply impacted by the oil spill. And it really changed the whole trajectory, honestly, not only of my research, because I was now studying, you know, an incredible oil spill and its impacts on these populations, but it also truly changed my whole career trajectory because I saw firsthand the impacts of environmental degradation on coastal habitats, but also what that means for the coastal communities that rely on those habitats and on those resources. And it, you know, really for me, pushed me towards working in applied research and applied science rather than in a more academic world. I knew I wanted to work in the world of science policy. And so I then was lucky enough to get a science policy fellowship through the National Academy of Sciences, which brought me back. So I was up in DC for a little while, but then that brought me back down here working at the Gulf Coast Ecosystem Restoration Council, which is a federal agency that was established after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill to help allocate some of the civil penalty dollars coming from the oil spill. So that just, you know, brought me into the restoration world, and I've now been here for the better part of a decade.
Very cool. Yeah, you're probably right that most people don't think of science policy as a career, that you're not really told about that, I guess.
You're really not. And it's such a critical piece of being a scientist, in my opinion, especially when we're working with these really complex problems, right? We're facing climate change, habitat loss, the effects of incredible environmental degradation. And while the research itself is fantastic and fundamental, right, to any decision that's being made, if that research doesn't get into the right decision makers' hands, it's not helping to advance policy.
Yeah. And so, speaking of birds, one of the projects I wanted to talk to you about from the Water Institute is the newly released avian data monitoring portal, as well as the guidance that you all released about that. So can you tell me what that project is all about and what was your involvement with it?
Sure. So this is a big project and a really exciting one. And as I mentioned, I am a bird nerd, so it's also very near and dear to my heart. So the avian data monitoring portal is the result of really over a decade's worth of survey work that was done by our partners with Calibri Consulting and RG Ford Consulting. And it's aerial survey work that was also funded through the Deepwater Horizon region-wide trustee implementation group and the Louisiana trustee implementation group. So those are two of the funding entities that are receiving funding as a result of the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. And in part, some of that funding is going towards restoration of bird habitats. But before decisions could really be made on which habitats to restore, there was just fundamental information that we didn't have about what were the habitats that the birds were actually using. So these are aerial surveys that started in 2010. Some of which are across the entire northern Gulf of Mexico. Some years, the surveys only took place in Louisiana. But it's really the first time that this amount of information, so almost a decade's worth of bird nesting data, has been made publicly available. And it's publicly available in the portal, not just as data sets, but actually it's a geospatially enabled tool, which means that you can go in and scroll through a map and zoom into different areas of Louisiana, for example, if you're interested in the nesting habitats of birds. In Grand Isle, for example, we have that information is in there and searchable. But it's also searchable by year, by state, by geographic region, and even by watershed, but also by all the individual bird species that were observed as a result of those surveys. And so it's really the first time that that level of data has been aggregated in one centralized location and can be searched to that degree. I'll tell you, if I wish this data set and this portal had existed when I was doing my dissertation research, because it would have made the early years of that research a lot easier. At that time, it was really hard to find even just where bird species were found. And so now this resource is available and out there for all the researchers. And it's not only, and so this is another reason I'm really excited about it, because I love birds and I'm passionate about restoration, right? So it's not only a great resource for avian biologists who can go and find all this information. And we've already had researchers reaching out to us from National Audubon with questions about, you know, some of the analyses that could be done with this information, but also other researchers at different universities are already digging into the tool and pulling information out. So it's really wonderful to see it being used and applied. But there's also important restoration data in there, because all of the survey data is colonial water bird survey data, right? And so it's the islands that they're all nesting on across the northern Gulf of Mexico. So there's a lot of really valuable habitat use information that's in those data sets, in these photographs, right? And so I think the next couple of years, it's going to be really exciting to see how that information, the surveys, the photos can be used by avian biologists and ecologists, but also by restoration planners, for example, because there's a lot of information in there about what are the habitats the birds are using, how do we restore habitats for birds in this regard. All that information is going to be in there and able to be used.
Wow, that sounds like an incredible tool for people to have.
It's pretty exciting.
So I know that another one of your roles here at the Water Institute is serving as the director of the Restore Act Center of Excellence for Louisiana. So can you tell me about what that center does, its mission, and how it functions within the Water Institute?
Sure. Yeah, the RestoreAct Center for Excellence for Louisiana, or the LACOE that we call it for slightly shorter. It's still pretty long to say LACOE. It's a unique program. So the funding for the RestoreAct Center of Excellence for Louisiana comes actually through the Department of Treasury, through then the Louisiana Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority, and then to the Water Institute. And so here at the Water Institute, it's an independent program that we run as a separate granting program, and we kind of manage the day-to-day operations of it. And what the program itself is it's a program to fund research that is directly related to the implementation of the Louisiana Coastal Master Plan. And so the Louisiana Coastal Master Plan is a plan that is written by the Louisiana Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority that helps to guide and focus the state in implementing its resources and planning for the restoration and protection of Louisiana's coastal resources, its economies, and its communities. And it's a plan that's updated every 6 years. And so the funding that is provided through the LACOE goes to Louisiana universities and institutions for research that is then directly applicable to those updates of the Coastal Master Plan. So the Center of Excellence was first funded in 2015. And since then, we've had two funding opportunities, and research from projects that were funded through the LACOE has been used in then subsequent updates of the Coastal Master Plan. So the most recent edition of the Master Plan just came out in 2023. And a couple of examples of research that was conducted using Center of Excellence funds is, you know, there were hydrological models that the updates of them were funded through the first funding cycle of LACOE. And the data that came out of that research was then used in updated models that are used in the analyses in the 2023 Coastal Master Plan. Similarly, there also was brown pelican research that has been funded under the Center of Excellence, and that research has gone directly into some of the restoration planning for birds and for brown pelicans that's taking place here in Louisiana. So it's a unique opportunity within the more academic research realm for researchers at universities to receive funding that is then directly applicable to decisions that are being made for restoration and for planning and for the protection of Louisiana's coast.
Yeah, so it kind of moves forward the master plan's initiatives.
Exactly. And the LACOE, as you know, as a staff that work on it, and me as a director, we work really closely with the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority and our partners at CPRA to identify what they have as their research needs and the different activities that they're looking to fund that will help them update the next version of the Coastal Master Plan. So we're actually just announced our next funding opportunity, our request for proposals. And for this newest batch of funding opportunity, we actually have up to $4.2 million in funding for research that will, again, help inform the next iteration of the Coastal Master Plan.
Very nice. So one of the things that struck me about reading about your areas of expertise was your background in structured decision making. And so I was wondering if you could tell me about what structured decision making means and how that influences the work that you do here.
Sure. Yeah. So structured decision making is, at its core, it's a transparent process to help guide decision makers through making complex decisions. What it is it's a process that is based in decision analysis and risk analysis. And it was developed in part through the Department of the Interior has a structured decision-making kind of training program, which I've been lucky enough to take part in. And through the Department of the Interior, the structured decision-making is often used to be applied to different natural resource decisions that need to be made. In working with endangered species, for example, there's these complex decisions where you're aiming to improve a population of the species, but there's also other stakeholders involved in that decision, right, which may be in conflict with just restoring a habitat for a certain species, for example. And what structured decision making does is it walks decision makers through a stepwise process to be able to make sure that everyone agrees that on what the problem is that needs to be answered, identifying the fundamental objectives of that decision. So at its core, you know, it's getting to that why are you making this decision? What is the fundamental objective? And when it comes to these complex problems, there can be competing objectives even, but it's just a way of articulating them and making sure that all decision makers that are involved in making that decision have those objectives identified and open and on the table, such that they can start then identifying the different alternatives of the types of actions that can be made to help meet those fundamental objectives. What the structured decision-making process does is keeps all of those steps kind of transparent, also make sure that the decision makers are agreeing at every step of that process, such that you don't get to the point where you're trying to make a decision and a decision maker comes in the last minute and says, oh, actually, I was looking at this totally different. I thought the problem was this, right? Mm-hmm. You've all articulated all together and agreed upon, here is the problem, here is our objectives in making a decision on this problem. And then that can allow you to you know, identify those alternatives and also do the analysis to weigh the trade-offs of the different types of decisions that can be made or the alternatives that can be taken action on. So structured decision-making is, you know, an important tool and a very useful tool in the work that we do here at the Water Institute, in that we are working with communities, with cities, with state decision makers who are dealing with complex and hard problems, right? You're talking about climate resilience and climate change. You're talking about even restoration decisions that need to be made. Having a structured process where everybody can see themselves walk through that process and walk through how a decision is reached is, again, a very useful tool and a tool that allows for transparency and hopefully to also bring the stakeholders who may not be directly involved in making that decision, but allows them to see that process and how a decision was made.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's so interesting. I love how it's about getting people to agree at every step of the way, because it seems like I don't know if you would agree, but that just collaboration between various entities is crucial with coastal restoration work in just terms of getting things done and making progress.
Absolutely. And I might clarify that they don't necessarily have to agree on the decision at every step of the way, right? But they just have to agree that all, like, their goal, their objective, they see themselves in the process, right? And they see themselves in the objectives that have been identified. And it helps them then, decision makers especially, to by seeing themselves, they see what they care about in that decision or in the way that the process is going, such that they can also then see their other decision makers and what they care about. Yeah. And again, like you said, it instills a collaborative process that helps decision makers, you know, make these hard decisions.
Yeah. What would you say that you like most about your job?
It's a great question. First off, I get to work with some brilliant people, absolutely brilliant people, and they're brilliant in so many different ways is the other thing. The Water Institute brings to the table this amazing skill set from modelers to policy and planners to, you know, statisticians and everything else in between. And having the opportunity to work interdisciplinary like that in most jobs and most organizations is not something that is usually available. And so I get to learn almost every single day that I come to work, because there is some new model that is being developed that I'm learning about. There's some new type of analysis that I'm learning about. So that's great. But it's also, you know, that interdisciplinary nature also means that we have to be collaborative. We also have to be understanding and kind and in the way that we work together as well. So the people who are drawn to work here also are kind and compassionate people too, working who want to work on these complex problems, that want to find answers that are going to help communities make decisions, you know, in the face of a changing climate or a changing world. And it means that you know, just getting to work with really some fantastic people here.
Are there any future plans or projects that you're particularly looking forward to right now?
Well, I am excited about the Center of Excellence's request for proposal that is out on the street right now. It's going to be really exciting to go through the process of having letters of intent and proposals come in and working with our partners at CPRA and through a full proposal review process to have those projects identified and get started. So that's really exciting. You know, it's exciting to see what fantastic new research ideas might be coming in that can help support the implementation of the Coastal Master Plan. We also have been funded to continue the avian survey work and work on aggregating that information into the avian monitoring portal. So that's exciting that that work's going to continue, and we're going to continue to aggregate that data. I'll say another project, though, that is really just getting off the ground is one that we are working with the City of New Orleans and our partners at National Wildlife Federation, at the Lower Ninth Ward Center for Sustainable Engagement and Development, as well as Nunez Community College, to develop a restoration prioritization plan for the Bayou Bienvenue Wetland Triangle Complex, which you know, is a complex that the habitat, talking about habitat degradation, you know, has been a degraded habitat for over almost 20 years now. And what we're going to do is, with our partners and with the City of New Orleans, is use a structured decision-making kind of framework to work with our partners, work with stakeholders to develop a restoration prioritization plan and work to identify out of that plan one project that will then be funded to bring to engineering and design with the hopes, you know, eventually of getting that work actually funded and the restoration to happen. So very excited about that, very excited about partnering with the City of New Orleans on that work. The funding is actually a combined funding from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, as well as through NOAA, that is going to the city and then to those partners that I mentioned. And where, you know, I think it's going to be, from, again, personally, it's right across the way from where I live, and excited to be able to work on that project, work with our partners, work with the community, and hopefully develop a restoration plan that can really be implemented there.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much, Jessica, for talking to me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. This is a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to On Our Watch. We hope you enjoyed our discussion with Jessica Hankel. Don't forget to subscribe to On Our Watch on your favorite podcast app to be notified about future episodes. You can find our feature-length documentary, On Our Watch, as well as a video version of today's episode, in the links below. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll be back with another episode next week. This podcast is made possible through support from the Greater New Orleans Foundation and executive produced by Bruno UK Steiner.